Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a wonderful weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, February the 23rd. Coming up, plans to add another store to a retail park in Kent. Nurseries in the county take on a challenge to get more children enjoying books. And we've got reaction from the Gillingham manager after a very disappointing result at the weekend. But first up today, an incredibly emotive story. A Sheppey woman who lost her dad to cancer is calling on peers not to stand in the way of the assisted dying bill. Now, MPs voted it through last June by a very narrow majority of just 23. It's now being debated in the House of Lords, but faces more than 1,000 amendments. Claire Blythe's dad, Thomas, passed away in December after being diagnosed with lung cancer. And Claire has been speaking to our reporter, Jo Crosley.
My dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer around about 18 months ago. And he'd already spoken about the assisted dying bill because of previous experience that had happened to him. About 9 years ago, he was nearly wrongly diagnosed with motor neurone disease. And obviously, we'd looked into going to the Zurich clinic if he had got the confirmation that it was motor neurone disease. Luckily, it wasn't. He was misdiagnosed. But I knew it was something he was passionate about. So as soon as he was given the diagnosis for cancer, we started to talk about it again. And he followed Esther Ranson's case very closely, hoping that things would get pushed through. We realised, obviously, in my dad's lifetime it wouldn't, and probably in Esther's it won't, bless her, but we spoke about it in great lengths, and it's something 100% he wanted. He didn't want to die in pain. He wanted to be a dignified, pain-free death, which he never got, I'm afraid.
Yeah, can you just talk to me a little bit about that experience? You said it was 3 weeks, basically.
Yeah, he was fine. He moved down here in April last year, and he was fine. We were going shopping weekly. He was coming to the pub with us weekly. All of a sudden, he started to develop black toes, which meant the cancer had spread. And literally within a matter of days, he stopped going out. He didn't want to go shopping. I was doing shopping for him. He started to have falls. I came home from work one day and he was on the floor. He'd been there for an hour and a half. So I stayed that night. And then the next day I got up and I just knew he wasn't right. So I rang my boss, and luckily 3 weeks after, not going to work. My dad sadly passed away. He deteriorated so quickly. It was awful.
Can you just tell me a little bit about Tom and who he was as a person?
Yeah, he was amazing, fun-loving. He loved a beer, probably too many beers, but that was him. He was hard-working, a really good family man, and he was really, really upbeat all the time. Nothing got him down. But to see him suffer was awful.
Yeah, I can imagine. So the assisted dying bill at the moment's now in the House of Lords, I'm right in saying.
Yes.
It's got around about 1,000 amendments to it, which is sort of holding it up. How closely are you following the bill, firstly, and what's your sort of thoughts on it as it stands at the moment?
I just think it's crazy that there's so many different amendments. I get there's a lot of people's views that need to be taken into account. Obviously, I understand people have to have the mental capacity to decide. It would be unfair on people that couldn't make that decision for themselves, because at the end of the day, it's their decision to make. I understand the doctor's points of view. They sign the Hippocratic Oath to preserve life, but at what cost should life be preserved? So there are amendments that need to be made, but I think there are helpful things that could be put in. I mean, as a family member, I would have more than happily given my dad the lethal injection or dose or whatever he needed rather than a doctor getting into trouble. Obviously, I love my dad to bits and I would never want him to die, but I didn't want him to suffer either. So I would have, if I'd have been given the opportunity, I would have easily have done that for him.
Is there a message you'd like to, if you had the chance to talk to one of the people in the House of Lords, what would you say to them about the assisted dying bill?
I would like to say, unless you've had personal experience, what gives you the right to stand in the way and stop this? I would have asked one of them to come around here in the last 5 days of my dad's life. He had the syringe driver fitted and basically didn't move, didn't eat, didn't drink, didn't speak to me for 6 days. I sat by his bed watching him eat himself, basically. He was a skeleton when he passed. The smell was awful, something I'll never forget. I washed him daily, but my family wouldn't even come in and visit him because he was basically rotting in front of my eyes. And that's no way for a human to be treated. Animals don't get treated like that, so why should humans be?
Now, if the bill isn't passed before the deadline of the King's speech in May, it won't be written into law. Jo's also been speaking to Sittingbourne and Sheppey MP Kevin McKenna, who supports the bill.
It's over 1,200 amendments now, most of which, more than half, are just been have been put there by seven peers. So obviously some of these amendments are really, really important and well considered, and either sharpen up or tighten up or make it clearer that the bill, if enacted, would actually function and function well and safely. And that's fine. But some of them, frankly, are just deliberate attempts to bog the bill down so that it will not pass, because it has to pass before the King's speech, the next King's speech. Otherwise, we'd have to start from the beginning. And look, the House of Commons has already made its will very, very clear. And some of them, frankly, are quite obviously vexatious. I'm deliberately there to block the bill. There's one that insists that everyone has to have a pregnancy test. Even if it's a man in his 90s, he would still have to have a pregnancy test. This is just ridiculous, right? There's another that would require the actual death to be filmed, which is clearly designed to discourage people, even if they believe it's right from them, is to put people in a situation where it's so uncomfortable that they wouldn't want it filmed, because then the risk is that other people would see it. There's one that I think of as a bit of a bucket list ban, which is insane. It's saying that if someone's been abroad on holiday within the last 12 months of their expected life, then they can't go through with it. I mean, obviously, a lot of people that are facing terminal illness, they may well decide they want to do that one last trip to Paris, or their one last, that seems to be a very, very humane thing to do. Why would we ban that? It's deliberately designed to put an undue pressure on an individual, not to express what would be their legal right to end their life at a time of their choosing if they're terminally ill. And there's loads of amendments like this throughout the bill. They're designed to waste time, and the House of Commons doesn't, and the House of Lords operate in different ways, which is the strength of it. The weakness is that the House of Lords, because it allows more discussion and debate, you can't block people from, well, frankly, deliberately wasting time and running down the clock, and that's what we're seeing now.
Well, you can let us know what you think today by commenting within the story at Kent Online, and we do thank Claire ever so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a man who stabbed two others at a pub in Thanet has been jailed. Caleb Andrew became violent following an argument at the Sea View Hotel and Bar in Birchington last November. The 30-year-old from Cuthbert Road in Westgate has been locked up for 2 years and 10 months. Another man who got involved was told to do unpaid work. A Canterbury man who threatened to stab his mum has been ordered to do unpaid work. A court's been told Alex Patrick also said he would attack police officers who'd been called to the address in May last year. The 29-year-old, who used to live at Hoare Close, has been given a suspended sentence and also ordered to do rehab sessions. A Kent County councillor who admitted subjecting his wife to years of controlling and coercive behaviour has been jailed. Daniel Taylor previously denied the allegations and was due to stand trial in May, but changed his plea last month. The 35-year-old from Margate has been sitting as an independent after being suspended by Reform. He's due to be locked up for 12 months. Police are investigating reports of criminal damage at a children's play centre in Tenterden High Street. Energy drink was sprayed along the walls of Rocket Sensory following a break-in on Wednesday night. The owner says they've had to change their end-of-day routines to ensure staff feel safe. Now, this is one of our most read stories on the website today. Plans have been put in to add another shop to a retail park in Sittingbourne. Reporter Alex Langridge joins me now with more on this story. Alex, thanks ever so much for being on the podcast. So, tell us a bit about the retail park and what's planned then.
Yeah, so the owners, EH Nichols, have drawn up some plans to build a new unit and make some changes to the existing car park. They're proposing an infill development to make use of some of the vacant space next to Carpetright and Dunelm. They claim that it's, to increase footfall to the complex, make it a bit more attractive to visit. Some concerns have been raised about the traffic and the light on some impacting houses, but that's all.
And do we know who's likely to occupy the site and what will happen in regards of the parking spaces that will be lost?
Yeah, so don't know who's going to occupy it yet, but the applicants have said that they're open to kind of having something that's either day-to-day shopping or specialised goods. A few people had already suggested they want a Primark. If it is approved, it would see the loss of about 22 car parking spaces, but they are proposing to create 17 new ones across the site, so in total only about 5 will actually be gone.
And finally, Alex, when will we know if the plans have been approved?
So a decision is expected by May 7th, but that obviously could change.
Alex, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online reports.
A person's been treated by paramedics following a house fire in Folkestone. Three engines were called to Sydney Street just after seven last night after the blaze broke out in a bedroom. It's thought it may have been sparked by a candle. Security is going to be improved at a hospital park and ride in Maidstone after it was used by joyriders. Gates at the site on Beaver Road in Allington will be locked at night while police patrols will be stepped up. The service has been running since the start of last year, but we're told CCTV could also be installed. Now, nurseries in Kent are taking on a challenge to read at least four books a day, as data shows children's reading has hit a 20-year low. Figures from the National Literacy Trust show one in 10 children don't own a book, and only half of parents read with their child daily. Busy Bees nurseries across the county are taking part in a nationwide initiative to help promote reading at home. Kate has been speaking to Jenny Shaw, who is the academic lead for Busy Bees.
We know that in the early years, the habits that we build then last for a lifetime. So what we're really aiming to do is help children to kind of understand the magic and the joy of stories from a really young age.
When the press release came through and I did get down to some of the statistics, I was really shocked. Can you talk me through about, I mean, when you read things like, you know, one in 10 children don't own a book, you know, when you see things like that, how does that make you feel?
Oh, well, I just think, you know, reading is so fundamentally important for so many other areas of learning that it really is quite concerning. As I say, that this data has come from the National Literacy Trust. So they've run a report and they're saying that children's enjoyment of reading has now dropped to its lowest point in 20 years. And that's just really sad. And one of the things that really stuck out for me was that research that shows that just half of parents read with their children on a daily basis. And some of the stats that they looked at relate to kind of older children. But as I said, you know, what we're thinking about for the early years is if children really learn to love and to value books, those habits stay with them. So they're more likely, if you read to your child when they're young, they're so much more likely to go on and be a reader when they're older. And as you said, you know, one in 10 children not having their own books. And there's a really clear link between book ownership and positive reading behaviour. So children who've got books of their own at home are four times more likely to say they enjoy reading and four times more likely to say to read every single day. So it's really important that children have got books around them as well.
Kent Online reports.
Plans to turn part of a seafront hotel in Folkestone into a townhouse have been rejected. The Devonshire House Hotel closed in 2008 after a decline in visitor numbers and has since been divided into sections. Planning officers turned down the application over concerns for a loss of tourism facilities. A former arcade on Sheppey is set to reopen as a sports lounge. The site in Beachfields in Sheerness has been empty for several years after closing during COVID. Neptune Sports Lounge is now moving from its current site in Neptune Terrace. Well, Charlie Minter is the owner and he's been speaking to reporter Joe Crosley.
Got the keys last week. From now, we're looking at when the bowling alley itself gets ripped out. It's going to go into storage and be sold, I believe. And then from there, basically, we're looking to build a wall to separate the arcade itself and for where we're going to be. And then the building process begins there, renovating all the toilets, the boilers, building a new bar, a cellar, a small kitchen where we'd be doing like bar snacks and things like that. So we've got a lot to do. It seems like we've got a long time to do it, but that time will surely run out pretty quickly. Before we know it, it'll be opening time in June.
Sure, and you're going to be adding new tables, the more tables, I should say, and more dart boards. That's
yeah,
right.
So at the moment, we've got quite a small club. We've got five pool tables, one snooker table, and two dart boards. One is in use most of the time, but we can pull the other one out if we need. And for tournaments as well, we shut down some of the pool tables and we can put up two extra dart boards. So essentially we can run competitions with four boards, but usually we have two up. So yeah, looking, moving into the new venue. So we're looking at, I don't know exactly what the dimensions of the room's gonna be at the moment, but 12 pool tables, an American nine ball table, which I believe will be the only one on the island since I don't know, the early 2000s. Two snooker tables, one of like a more professional standard, so smaller pockets, under table heating, and then another snooker table, which will be your bog standards, your guys coming off the street that want to play the game but aren't quite as advanced as some of the others. And I'm quite excited about the project of doing the dart boards as well. Having a section of five boards will allow us to run bigger, better comps and stuff like that, be more consistent in running competitions and things as well, which I'll be getting some help with through one of the local ladies, Sherry Lee Whitehead. She's the wife of Conan Whitehead. It's actually his birthday today. Happy birthday, Co. Co's one of the dart players that we sponsor on the island. He's been on the Modus, the Super Modus Tour and things like that. He's actually won the very first one. He's been on the Pro Tour and stuff like that. So yeah, along with Sherry Lee, I think the darts being pushed on the island, well, especially for me, it's quite big on the island anyway, but on my section, I believe we can expand quite a lot.
Yeah, and you mentioned to me on the phone yesterday that part of the passion behind the darts and the push behind it is because of Luke Littler and how much the dart game has expanded.
Absolutely. Already on the island, there's a couple of places that do youth academies. The Sheerness East Working Men's Club do a fantastic little academy on a Sunday. I don't know if it's every week, but I believe that they get in quite a few kids to come and play darts and get them interested in the sport. And yeah, Luke Littler and the rise of what he's done has been absolutely massive for the game of darts. So I think it'll be silly to, you know, push it to one side and say, no, I'm not going to do darts. I think it has to be pushed.
It's set to open in early June. Developers have submitted plans to turn a piece of agricultural land near Tunbridge into a site for over 100 homes. The application is for land north of Hadlow Park off the A26 Maidstone Road and also includes play and parking facilities. A campaign group has raised concerns over increased traffic, pollution, lack of infrastructure and impact on wildlife. Herne Bay could get its very first McDonald's. The fast food chain has submitted plans to convert the former Table Table restaurant on Margate Road. If approved, it wouldn't have a drive-through but would open from 6am until midnight. Meantime, plans for a new Greggs in Margate have been withdrawn after hundreds of objections were raised. The bakery chain was set to take over the former Boots in Northdown Road in Cliftonville, but more than 600 people signed a petition against it. Other business owners say it would have impacted independent shops in the town.
Kent Online News.
Next on the podcast, and we've been hearing today about how installing solar panels on the roof of Rochester Cathedral could help with net zero targets. Yep, you heard me correctly. Well, the idea is in its early stages with no funding or permission granted just yet, but there are also plans to install heat pumps to cut down on carbon emissions. Simon Lace is the site's chief operating officer. He's been chatting to Lucy.
It's a plan that we're working on. Obviously, there's lots of approvals that we need to obtain before we can do that. But we do have a plan. We have a proposal which we're discussing with the authorities. And it's something that we feel that we do need to do. The building is very hard to heat. It's a very old, very big building, very leaky building as well. So we are looking at the option of installing air source heat pumps, which will do a lot to reduce our carbon load, but won't actually save as much money if we do it that way. Putting solar panels on the roof will actually help lower our energy bills. So we want to try and do the two things in conjunction. We're already going to install air source heat pumps in part of the cathedral to cool and heat our crypt. That's going to happen this year. So that's the first stage of work we're doing. We've already, in the past 3 years, changed all of our lighting in the cathedral at a cost of £500,000 to LEDs. And that has reduced our carbon load by about 12 tons of carbon every year since we've done that. So we're embarking on a long journey. It is going to be immensely difficult to get to carbon zero. It's fine if you're a modern building, but if you're a Norman building built in the 12th century, you know, there are lots of challenges that we need to face before we can be carbon zero, but we're working towards that.
A Ramsgate mum is hoping to set a new half marathon world record to inspire other disabled people. Eleanor Ferguson has a fused spine but is taking on the London Landmarks half marathon to raise raise money for charity Tommy's. The 50-year-old's hoping to be the fastest person ever with a fused spine to complete the 13 miles. New solar-powered post boxes are being installed across Kent. Royal Mail's rolling out the tech, which will allow us to send and return parcels as well as post letters. They feature a barcode scanner and drop-down drawer. And a Hollywood movie, partly shot right here in Kent, has won a BAFTA Film Award. Scenes from F1 the movie were filmed at Brands Hatch near Sevenoaks, and it won the award for Best Sound at the ceremony last night. Other big winners were One Battle After Another, I Swear, Frankenstein and Sinners.
Kent Online Sports.
Well, let's start off at the Winter Olympics, where Kent's Taylor Lawrence missed out on a medal. Team GB finished seventh in the final of the four-man bobsleigh. Germany's crew won gold by just 0.57 of a second. And the Games closing ceremony took place last night with Kent's Matt Weston, who won two golds at the Games, a Team GB flag bearer. On to football now, and it was a very disappointing afternoon for Gillingham on Saturday. They were beaten 3-0 by Oldham Athletic at Priestfield, leaving them 16th in League Two. Manager Gareth Ainsworth spoke to the club's media team following the defeat.
A couple of things. I didn't see it coming, and it wasn't good enough. And I've had a go at the boys at the end of the game, saying it wasn't good enough, it's not acceptable. And there's not much more I can say, you know. There's details that we'll go into, but way short of the level. And that's why we've been beat 3-0.
Difficult start, wasn't it? I suppose when you concede twice in 20 minutes, you're always having an uphill climb. And to be fair, we had a good spell at the end of the first half, and that was the time we had to score.
Yeah, listen, we didn't defend well at all in that first 20 minutes. They bullied us, they got the better of us too many times. A couple of set pieces again we've conceded. And then we need to score when we're on top in that period. I firmly believe there's a penalty on Sam Volks, and that probably changes things a little bit, but you sometimes don't get them, so we've got to accept that. Bradley's been really unlucky, and our keeper's made a couple of amazing saves on that. But we were really going well, really aggressive, and I thought Gareth was causing all sorts of problems down the right there. We're getting at half time, and I'm told that Gareth McCleary's got to come off because of an injury. So that sort of compounds, you know, the day. We changed formation second half, really. Chances again, we've got to stick them in. But the third goal again, it just sums the performance up very poor today. Like I say, not good enough for me, not good enough for the fans, not good enough for Gillingham. And there'll be changes, definitely. And I'm a stark reminder of what job I've got to do here.
And we can also hear now from midfielder Bradley Dack.
Didn't start the game well. Two set pieces again we conceded. And then probably didn't do quite enough in the second half to warrant getting back into the game. We had chances. I had a couple in the first half that probably should have done better with. And I think maybe if we got the first a little bit earlier, we might have had a more of a go at it. Really difficult. Obviously the fans have every right to have their opinion. Don't blame them for having that at half time and full time, because we're a better team than that. And we showed out there today, and obviously a little bit of a tough run of form, and yeah, it's a difficult time.
You're a seasoned pro, you've played a number of games. When a team is in a bit of a rut, how do you lift yourself? How do you get yourself out of it?
I think Gaffer took a bit of stick today, which and he's the one that lifts us. He's the one that gives us confidence. He's so positive. And he's been like that since I've known him. So I'm sure he'll be exactly the same next week, trying to pick us all up. But I think it's got to come from within. He picks the team, but we're the players going out there and putting in performances like that isn't good enough. Obviously we let him down, let the fans down. So it's a difficult one to take for us. We have to look at ourselves in the mirror, every single one of us, what we can do better, what we can do more of, how we can improve, all these things. And I know it's something that the fans don't want to hear, the cliches and stuff like that. I don't really like it either, but we've just got to go back to basics, I think.
The Jewels' next match is away at Barrow on Saturday. Staying with football, and Chatham Town's women's FA Cup run has come to an end. They were thrashed 8-0 by Birmingham City in the fifth round at the weekend, having only been 1-0 down at half-time. The fourth-tier team were the lowest-ranked side left in the competition. Meantime, London City Lionesses are in action in the FA Cup tonight. The side who train in Aylesford welcome Tottenham to their home ground in Bromley. The draw for the next round will be made just before kick-off, which is at 7:30. And finally, in ice hockey, Kent's Invicta Dynamos beat Solent Devils 6-3 on Saturday night. It means the Mos now sit fourth in the South Division 1 table. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.